Steelers, demons, ghosts outside. Screaming, you can run, but you can't hide. You can't scare me, I'm already dead inside.
Welcome back to another episode of the Tex-Chris Dave Saw Massacre. I'm here, as always, with Dave Stoneborough.
I'm Dave Stoneborough, who is here with, as always, Chris Vandenberg.
Thanks for having me in my basement.
Of course, man. This is the Tex-Chris Dave Saw Massacre, the podcast where we watch and then immediately talk about horror movies.
Hell yeah. Today, we're watching 2008's Splinter.
Spiky. Splinter, yeah.
So this Pokey. Is
Pokey. Any other...
Synonyms? I don't know.
Should we do that instead of content?
We could. We were going back and forth with them yesterday over Messenger, and I ran out after Pokey and Prickly.
Okay, so that was funny. I don't know if you were picking up on that yesterday. I think we can get right into it. I wasn't super game for the conversation. Like, I was a little dull.
Oh, I didn't get that. It's hard to read emotions and mood over Messenger. Yeah.
Facebook Messenger. Okay, so two nights ago, can we just hop right into Scare and Tell?
Yeah, please.
Scare and Tell.
All right, so two nights ago, I rewatched Poughkeepsie Tapes.
Oh my god!
Yeah,
how could you?
I
want to eventually. Don't get me wrong.
Such
it's
a fucking mistake.
What was it like round two? Did Jody watch it with
you? No. I did it on my own.
Oh god.
Jody's never gonna watch that movie.
Uh huh.
So I just can't deal with the fallout.
What prompted this? What made you out of nowhere say, "Hey, I've got some time"?
Because the last movie I watched that I chose to watch that was a horror movie was Would You Rather, and it was such garbage. And you know, I'm getting away with these hour and a half garbage movies one after the other.
Yeah,
and going like, there's a few scenes to take away from it, and so I just like needed like a hit of uncut horror heroin, and I went to Poughkeepsie Tapes.
That's fair enough. You needed a strong reminder of, how effective the genre can be.
Yeah, this is what it's like. This is what we do.
Jesus, man. There's other films you could have watched to do that.
That was the one that jumped to my mind. It's like, it's not the longest movie in the world, and I know it's pure active ingredient. So,
what, on the second viewing, what was the most disturbing moments?
Okay, so the most disturbing moments on the second viewing was definitely the Girl Scouts coming to the house, and then that scene ending,
knowing that she's under the table.
She's the table.
Or
yeah.
Is the table.
Is the table. He's like resting his feet on. And so you're so terrified, even though I knew that they were safe.
Mm-hmm.
That scene was so scary because I knew she was the table and I was just watching the whole time. But also, they hear a sound downstairs and it's the other victim.
Right.
Escaping because Cheryl didn't secure her right.
Mm-hmm.
And it made me think, I don't think we talked about this when we watched the episode, but do you think that's the reason that he cut off her hands?
As punishment?
Yeah.
I'm not sure. Was there any indication? No, because we didn't know her hand was cut off until that final scene, really.
Yeah.
Could be.
So I feel like, I mean, that's a little connection I made, and it made it so much worse.
Oh, god damn it, Dave.
So then, I don't know if this is what you try to make happen or what horror people, kind of expect to live with, but like it literally gave me nightmares.
Yeah.
And kept me up.
Yeah.
Almost like I had a not great sleep last night, but the night before, damn.
Way worse.
I was thinking about, I had this sort of image of being standing on a porch and talking to a bunch of people and news reporters and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And then I had this crazy sneaking suspicion that one guy holding a handy cam, it was just this dreadful, horrible feeling.
Jeez.
That's kind of all it was, but...
Yeah, that movie really does capture that dread that you have kind of in nightmares something's wrong and I can't put my finger on it.
Exactly.
What's unsettling about this?
Dude, that movie is, it is a horrible, horrible masterpiece.
Absolutely. And I'm so glad it exists just because now when people are like, oh, you see every horror movie, they must not affect you. Or when people ask the question, what's the scariest movie? I'm like, this is definitely the scariest movie that I've ever seen. And please don't watch it if you don't think you can handle it.
Yeah, I want to gush about it to people, but you can't.
No.
It's going to traumatize most people.
It makes Hostel feel like a happy Disney movie. There's a happy ending.
Yeah, you kind of realize
it's revenge.
Torture is one thing, but emotional... type of shit that you're forced to watch is so much worse.
Yeah.
I don't like seeing weird eyeball and fingernail and throat and skin stuff. That's gross.
Mm-hmm.
And it makes me cringe, but it has nothing on the staying power of the horrific Poughkeepsie Tape style traumatic torture.
And funny how the two ones that have really fucked us up the most are ones that don't involve like any kind of supernatural element, but it's just like both Martyrs and this are just humans, you know, terrorizing other humans for really bizarre ways that just get under your skin somehow more effectively than any other subgenre.
Yeah, and some also to do with like the drawn out version of those tortures, just that they never end.
You're right, relentless, both of them.
Yeah.
Well, I watched a little movie.
Let's hear it.
Called Lake Bodom.
Oh, Lake Bodom. I feel like we talked about this before.
Have we? Have you seen this one? We brought it up before because it was, I think, one of the big early Shudder exclusive ones that they picked up.
So I did not see this one.
Right. It's from Finland.
Lake Mungo is the one I was thinking.
Ah, okay. Yeah, is that also more recently? More recent of a release?
Recent-ish.
Okay. This one came out last year, and it's from Finland, and it's just four teens going camping. It's like a woodsploitation kind of film. Uh-huh. It starts off a little cliche. The whole background and premise is that they want to go camping at a site, or the two dudes want to go camping at the site where this murder happened in the 60s, and the murderer was never found.
Sure.
And that's a real murder. Like, that's the premise for this movie. So this actually happened in Finland, and four teens were, I think three were killed in their tent, like in their sleep, and then another one was badly injured and found outside the tent. That person was a suspect for a while, but it quickly became clear that it was someone else, and they just never found who it was.
Ooh, geez.
So that's the premise for this movie and the characters in this movie. The guys want to go camping at this spot, and they want to bring these two girls along. So at the top, it's kind of cliche, but then throughout the movie, it takes some really interesting and good twists, and it's very, very enjoyable, things that you don't see coming.
Okay.
One of those where at one point you're watching, you're like, oh, it would be really good if they just did this, and then, oh, maybe I'll lock that in the back of my brain for something right, and then they just do it.
Oh, cool.
And you're like, oh, there it is. Beautiful.
That's when you give them kind of the benefit of the doubt. You know what would be cool? And then they pleasantly surprise you.
And they do it. They follow through with it. So there's some good surprises, some well-written twists, and ultimately at the end, it kind of has a cliche final act as well, but I think it's well worth watching, and there's some good twists, and
yeah,
I always love a good camping movie.
Absolutely. And I've said this before too, but like, your cliche versions of those movies, some members of the audience haven't seen the things that make it so cliche, so they may just hit that as like, wow, that was fresh and the greatest thing ever.
Totally. And there's kind of something to be said for cliches too, as long as they're just slightly different enough. I mean, the reason why we love watching food shows like Chopped or something over and over again is we love the rhythm of them. You know, even though it's like the exact same like three-act structure, there's something comforting about going through the motions. That's why we can watch so many slasher movies.
Yeah, absolutely. And then something like, I was just going to think of a weird one, like The Temple.
Did you watch that?
I didn't, but no, it just seems bonkers. I watched a trailer and like tried to read through a little bit about what it is.
I think that one,
like a super long, weirdly paced, strange, supernatural meets all sorts of shit kind of movie
with a compelling looking poster.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
Oh, that looks really cool. But I think that's going to be ape shit all over the place. And I mean, I haven't seen it. It's a terrible example to choose, but I doubt it'll hit those beats that make, you know, sitting down throwing on a popcorn horror movie satisfying.
Totally, totally. Yeah. And that one, I was deterred to watch it just from the super low ratings. Like, apparently it's a pretty bad movie.
Temple?
Okay. But what was somewhat compelling about that one is that Simon Barrett is actually credited as the writer.
Really?
Yes. And when the movie came out and was released, he was like, what the fuck is this? And he actually wrote a script for a friend of a movie called Temple like 10 years ago or something like that.
No way.
And it was like a job that he did for 2 weeks. Like, he just kind of wrote out a quick script, handed it to him, and I guess gave up the rights to, but he said the script in the form that is in this movie, like, they clearly did infinite amount of rewrites. Like, it is not my original material. I'm just credited and they're trying to use my name to help like boost the film.
For sure.
But he like instantly dissociated himself from it. He's like, yeah, I'm credited for this technically because I did write the first draft, but I'm like, I had no say in the final draft and I don't want my name attached to it.
Okay. You wonder
politics, huh?
Yeah, but you wonder how much of it is like following at least the trail set by Simon Barrett's original script.
Mm-hmm.
You wonder if some of his pacing or anything like that is going to be a part of it. That's kind of
interesting. Yeah, I know, it's somewhat compelling, but then the bad reviews lead me to think like just how bad they are. I think it's like lower than 10% lead me to think either they bastardized his original idea, if his original idea was any good, or this is a Simon Barrett script from the era of Frankenfish and that other one is that he's famously disavowed.
I think some people have called that his golden era.
We got to run a Twitter poll sometime soon so we can hopefully watch Frankenfish.
Yeah, Frankenfish is never going to win a Twitter poll. Mm. And I cannot wait to try to doctor the next one.
I think we just need to put it up against something even worse. Yeah. That would give it its best shot.
Yeah, that's like putting a one-armed boxer against a tired cat.
Wait. A one-armed boxer and a tired cat?
A tired cat.
And the tired cat is Frankenfish in this one. Because while the one-armed boxer is debilitated, he's still got a boxing arm.
Yeah, and every movie has got a boxing arm on Frankenfish's tired cat. Yeah, yeah, that's what I meant.
I love that metaphor. I love when you just like shoot out a metaphor without fully like completing it with a thought.
Yeah, well, I mean, with a friend like Chris Vandenberg, you never get away with it. Let's immediately dig into that.
I think I let you get away with a lot.
Well, that's true.
Mm-hmm. I think we're equal not letting each other get away with shit.
Yeah, we hold each other somewhat accountable now and again.
Mm-hmm. Can you tell it's like 9:30 a.m. scaredy cats and we like just rolled out of bed or sipping our first sips of coffee?
Yeah, and I am a little just like unhappy since watching Poughkeepsie Tapes.
Oh, I see.
It really sticks with you.
It does.
Like the second time, it doesn't matter. It makes no difference. It was almost like the same effectiveness.
Crazy, dude.
Crazy. Like I just want to talk about Poughkeepsie Tapes now.
That makes me feel like bad for you, like sympathy or empathy, because I know what that's like. But it also makes me excited that at some point in the future, I can have that experience again, as twisted and masochistic as that is.
Yeah, it's different because you see this stuff coming, so you start squirming before anything's even happening. Mm-hmm. So you don't even get the relief, you know?
Right.
You're just waiting for the next horrible thing, and you're getting like flashbacks of what's coming. Like it's a rough experience to watch. Ugh. Time two.
And it's so perfect in that found footage format.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
yeah.
It's
just the most watchable thing in the world. It mm-hmm. seems like you're watching like a collection of video clips,
right?
More than anything. Like you're on YouTube and it's just on autoplay.
Which is exactly the intention.
Oh God. And that one guy who is just like, he watched all of them and he's like, I want to see.
So fucked
ones.
Up. Yeah. Yeah. He's like, haven't slept in.
Yeah. And his wife won't let him touch him.
Yeah.
For like a year.
Ugh, 'cause she just watched one.
Yeah.
A random one.
She accidentally put one on and then wouldn't let him touch her for a year.
Jesus. This Dave and Christy.
This is Dave and Christy.
We watched The Devil's Candy.
Damn. Some Ethan Hombre.
Yeah, it was your fourth favorite of 2017 and my sixth favorite of 2017. So pretty high up in the Texas Dave Saw world.
That's the movie that I'm dying to watch again, but I wanted to have enough space that it really hits me.
Oh, well, it's been a year.
Yeah, I guess so.
Mm-hmm.
That's enough space. That and I want to double feature it with Loved Ones.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Because nothing feels like those two movies. Like I was thinking a little bit about Loved Ones when you asked on whatever episode it was about, is there any movie that has such a good ending feeling as Before I Wake? And no, but like Loved Ones is close to me just in terms of pure satisfaction and the fact that he's out, you know?
Yeah.
It feels so good. And
totally.
It doesn't feel that dark that she's killed either.
No, it's kind of similar to Get Out in that
yeah,
sense.
Yeah, yeah,
like,
yeah.
They both have that same kind of satisfaction ending where you cheer and you're happy.
That would have been a good one to bring up. Get Out.
But you're right that those two movies are like, they're like each other in that they're so tight and they're so polished and they both kind of have a similar vibe to them. They're very, very clearly the same director who's made both of them.
Yeah.
And I think that would be wonderful to watch his two movies back to back.
Yeah, totally. Weird pacing too, you know, just like you get little strange reveals of stuff.
Yeah. And genuinely unexpected where both of those go.
Yeah. I know this isn't even Devil's Candy. I'm just talking about Loved Ones now, but when the guy runs outside and climbs up the tree and they're just throwing rocks at him.
Yeah.
Like that's so great.
So strange. And then I just love that great third act wrap. We're just straight up talking about the Loved Ones now.
There we go. This is Dave and Chris Tree.
When just you find out that the dudes are still in the basement, like underneath the floorboards.
And
like,
they're like weird monster
great
zombie
yeah
people. Yeah.
Yeah. That's such a great, like, just add a whole other layer of depth to what's happening.
Yeah.
Like, I love when they kind of pull the rug from under your feet two-thirds of the way through a horror movie like that.
Yes. Nothing better than that.
Yeah. Yeah.
But so my favorite scene, or the scene that comes to me first thinking back on Devil's Candy, is probably when Ray gets in the house, he hits those two cops and just comes in, and Ethan Hombre does
that duck behind the window.
And then they have that sequence where he fires the gun.
Yeah.
Oh my God, that is just some of the most satisfying piece of horror cinema I can think
of. You're totally right. That moment is so beautiful. And the one that came to mind for me was where he's, you have the montage of him painting and the blood splashing
when he's killing the
kid,
which
is also just a beautiful sequence.
Oh yeah, and that's such a great way to, let's getting away from Poughkeepsie Tapes where it's just all disturbing, get away from the fact that he's sawing up a child. And what we got instead was like this vibrant red on white of the blood in the tub with the water and
contrasted
the saw,
with the paint,
and then the paint. Yeah, it, just the most gorgeous way to show the most horrific violence.
And you had just that metal soundtrack accompanying that scene as well. That's most such, of those scenes in that movie.
That's such a tumultuous like scene and grouping of feelings to watch. The expertly done. What a fantastic shot. And we talked about how that should be the trailer.
Just that entire sequence.
Exactly.
Because then you don't really know what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, in a different world.
Yeah, man.
Where you can pull off a trailer like that and people will be like, what? Won't be like, what?
Yeah.
I'm not seeing this. What is a painting movie?
Rather than the kind of trailer where, in a world where paint and metal.
That'd be if the 80s trailer. Yeah. What movie were we talking about?
Videodrome.
Yes. Yeah. The Videodrome trailer version of that splashy paint. Awesome. Okay, so we're doing Splinter, which was a scare and tell that you brought about a month ago, and you've since insisted, we have to do this, or I'm just going to watch it alone.
Yes, indeed.
Like, that was the threat. I'm going to watch it on my own.
Yeah, I'm like, I'm just going to watch Splinter again. And you're like, no, chill.
It's fine.
Come down off the ledge, man.
Let's do it.
We'll do it. Yeah, and I didn't really want to say this, because I didn't know if anyone would agree, and I know you hadn't seen it yet, but we watched them back to back in terms of me and Jody doing our Sunday afternoon horror movies. We watched Splinter, and then the next week we watched The Ritual.
Mm.
Jody preferred Splinter.
Wow. Yeah. I do remember you saying this. Yeah.
Yeah. She likes Splinter better.
Well, it's got pretty good reviews. 74% Rotten Tomato, 6.1 IMDb. Apparently it did extremely well at Screamfest, a horror film fest in Los Angeles. Got a bunch of awards.
Yeah. And one of them was best editing. Am I right about that?
Really? I'm not sure.
I didn't write down specifics. I'm pretty sure it was.
Cool.
And I was like a little confused about that. So I'm really, really interested in seeing like,
we'll get into that,
how this is cut together.
And I guess just it doing so well at Screamfest is what allowed the director, Toby Wilkins, what gave him the opportunity to direct The Grudge 3,
which I
never saw.
Nope. But Grudge 3 cost $5 million and made $38.6 million.
What?
Yeah.
Did that thing go to theaters?
Yeah, I guess. It's The Grudge, sure.
But I don't remember that at all. I remember 1 and 2 having big releases. I don't remember 3 coming to theaters.
Maybe it was... Was it in North America? Was it in Canada? Like
maybe. Maybe it was just abroad. Yeah, strange. We'll have to look into that.
Yeah, but pretty crazy. I just like the thought that he made Splinter and then his other feature, they gave him $5 million.
Yeah.
That's, I don't know.
Well, how much did Splinter cost? I mean,
couldn't find it. But they had like a super limited release on it, so it made like 400K or something.
Right.
I have no idea what the budget was.
From the posters that I've seen, it looks like there's some very intense graphic effects in.
Yeah.
So that must have some money behind it.
Yeah.
To make it look good.
Yeah. And is it Shea Whigham is the main guy, I think?
Or one of the main actors?
Yeah. He's not cheap. Paul Costanzo. I can't imagine he's cheap.
Mm. Oh, yeah, yeah. You said Paul Costanzo. That's nice. All right. Well, give a little plot synopsis for me. Sell me on this movie again.
Okay. So there's looks like an animal's got this weird virus of some kind, makes some super aggressive, weird black spike effects on it. Kind of this oily blood black spike effect. And spreads pretty rapidly. And it happens to coincide with this secondary plot of a hostage situation taken by a criminal on the run.
Wonderful. Sounds good, man.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, those two worlds collide in a little movie called Splinter from 2008.
Let's jump into it.
Why don't we hop right in and watch the movie Splinter?
Cheers.
Cheers.
Now, Splinter.
We did Splinter. We just watched it. What did you think?
I liked it.
It was a good one.
I think that's a lot of fun.
That's a very fun movie. For an hour and 20 minutes?
Uh-huh.
That feels like 4 hours.
A nice, tight, enjoyable
horror
movie.
Yep. Lots to see, lots of great effects, creatures, great, I think a really great story.
The first half, I was frustrated by the low budgetness of it because like you didn't see too much of the creature or anything, but then by the end, you're satisfied enough, I think.
Oh, yeah,
you see enough angles of it. It is still very much like, okay, let's move the camera quick, let's only show them little bits, so that we don't have to like over impress or have too many effects. But
you nailed it. That was like when I finished watching it the first time, I was like, I just wish they had a little bit more money so I could see it a little easier, you know, because they did a really good job of like keeping it very bright, and all the characters, you could see them and in their conversations, they're very clear. All the colors are very bright.
Yeah.
And in the early stages, you get to see them, like the zombie things, a little better. Mm-hmm. Like when his girlfriend was smashing her head on the window right at first.
Right.
We get to see her a lot more. But then as they start to become less and less human and more monstrous or fused into the big one or whatever it was.
Yeah. So is that multiple bodies that have now fused in? It's just like an amorphous blob of
exactly
human flesh and just spiky parts.
Yeah. Just recombinating the human goo.
That's great. That's really exciting.
Yeah. It real quick, Dave's Game Corner.
All right.
I want to play a game.
Yeah.
Dave's in the corner playing games. Want to play a game.
This is like, I want to talk about it so much because it's like Dead Space. It's like they're taking human bodies, and some of them maintain that. They've got this very weird marionette-like movement. They're spiky, and they're changing themselves into like basically weapons to infect more.
Yeah.
And they'll recombine into these big, huge, gross monsters.
You're right. That totally happens in Dead Space.
Yeah. It just fucking awesome. And just like the concept of like these things that are corpses, they're just laying around not doing anything until there's like a heat source introduced, and then they go haywire.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so they're just immobile laying there, and then they'll jump up and be insane.
Yeah.
Oh, just so Dead Space.
Very pleasing. Mm-hmm. I didn't get the sense that we were done with the thing, especially by the end. I mean, you have that last shot of it growing in the forest, but it doesn't feel like a creature that they defeated. It feels like something that is all over the place, and
yeah,
it's going to become a problem even more.
Exactly. It seems like you can't eradicate that with, like, you know, shooting your gun at explosive sources and making a fire. That's not going to wipe everything out. No. I mean, conveniently, the humans who were infected are all in that blaze. I think they're all burned up, and I think that's safe to say. But yeah, that creature we saw in the woods, the thing on the road,
but
still,
they ran over in the first place.
Yeah, the tire has those spikes in it. Mm-hmm. Like, it's around. It's definitely not.
And they're trying to give you the idea that this is like an old species, like all the comments about the old forest and everything.
Sure.
Like,
yeah,
this is something that's dormant and now has finally like come to the foreground.
Yeah. Yeah. I could see that.
Yeah.
They don't really. And you know, it doesn't take itself too seriously in that way. Like where did it come from? Like, we don't need a shot of the meteorite hitting or
no,
you know, some old well being exposed and some accident or whatever.
I thought some of the writing at the top was a little heavy handed just in having to set up exposition. Like, you always say this, or haven't you always planned to do this? Kind of, like, it just was over delivering it.
Definitely.
But then it quickly got away from that. Like, once we were in the action, then it was fine. And the writing was totally acceptable.
Yeah. It finds its groove for sure in like every way.
Yeah.
With the dialogue at the top. Yeah.
That's like, it. Oh. I was skeptical the first like kind of 20 minutes, but then once it started happening, like that one room setting is so great. The whole hostage thing is a perfect narrative to throw in with it.
I love that because, you know, you can come up with a million different, like, let's just say zombie survival. You're stuck inside somewhere trying to survive it. You can come up with a million situations for that. This one, it could have just been a boring, we're in the convenience store and there's lots of cool things we can do with that.
Yeah.
But they layered it with the fact that they shouldn't be there. They should be out camping.
Yeah.
This is a hostage situation and she has like a strung out girlfriend who's like a junkie.
What a cast of characters. A motley crew.
Yeah. It's just super complicating things. Mm-hmm. Love that. And him, Shea Whigham, like, I love his performance in this movie. Like,
it's fantastic, man.
Yeah, like, he really, really invests.
He's from Boardwalk Empire.
Yeah, that's where I know him from. I'm sure he's got some other role.
He's
got
to have other things. This is,
yeah, I've seen him in other stuff,
too. What an incredible actor, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And Paul Costanza is a perfect contrast. It's just kind of the dorky, more muted character.
Yeah. And they did a good job at making him just useless at the beginning, but then slowly over time, as traditional methods of survival failed,
absolutely,
he became the most useful person.
Mm-hmm.
I love it. That, like, is most actualized to me when they're like, I know what we'll do. We'll set the forest on fire. And they just go for it. And he's like walking around. He's like, this is not a good idea. This is not a good
idea. What are we thinking?
Yeah. And they're just doing it. They just get the dustpan and start.
I love how quickly, like, just once the situation arises, it just goes from, okay, it's this hostage situation and you have two people kind of against two people and they're dealing with that.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's not like it happens in a moment. It's like it slowly transitions over like a half hour period of the bigger threat is this guy's holding us hostage to we're in this together and we all three of us need to somehow find a way to beat this creature.
Yeah, it kind of starts with Paul Costanzo like he's saying we're gonna lock the door,
mm-hmm.
but then as he like pulls her body over to the door and his girlfriend locks them out,
right
he's like, no, you have to open the door. Like he's understanding, he's like, the safest route right now is to be smart, mm-hmm. not to be scared,
mm-hmm.
you know. So he starts there by saying like, we need to work together. And then it evolves when that, like, the little fingers come in and they have to run away from the arm.
Which is just, that's such an, I mean, this movie is just a bunch of insanely entertaining, suspenseful sequences. Like, with the mm-hmm. hand running around inside, that's whole, yeah. one whole thing. The tension of them with the hangers built to try to get the yeah. walkie-talkie, that whole scene.
That sequence was
great.
The whole
sequence of him, like, being cold but having to go to the car.
Yeah.
Like, these are great things that just really flesh out a horror movie, like just individual moments.
Actually, absolutely. Yeah, mm-hmm. just at one point they're running from a smaller version of a creature inside.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the arm and hand, all those effects were super fun to watch. Like, really satisfying.
I loved it. I loved just the three finger and a bit of an arm thing yeah. that was just kind of flipping over itself.
Yeah, like the two bones in the forearm
yeah.
separated to kind of make their own little, like, limbs.
Tripod-y kind of thing.
Yeah, and it was running around, like, flipping and, like, just batting and attacking. And it's, like, it's cool how they gave that exposition. It's, like, they're on autopilot. They're just looking for heat.
Mm-hmm.
In the same way that they're covered in spikes, so they're just looking to make contact. So the initial kill, like, what the girlfriend gets bashed with,
mm-hmm.
This thing just flies by her and hits her so hard that she smashes into like the gas thing,
yeah,
and that's, I guess, paralyzes her or whatever, like enough
she's
to finish the
from
job
that point.
That's,
yeah,
that's it, just by getting hit,
mm-hmm.
and then it
she's
goes.
Hit in the head too, right? So I assume some spiky things are,
yeah,
I mean, this stuff gets you really quick. Like when the cop comes, the blood was dripping on her face, and instantly one of the droplets of blood that hit her kind of spikes out of her cheek,
out.
And she's like wiping it away.
Yeah.
But if you like just get in contact with something that's infected, you're toast, pretty much.
Yeah, exactly. But I mean, they had some success with
cutting the arm off.
Cutting
yeah.
the arm off, which was one of the best like
oh
amputations I've ever seen.
It just, there was no, usually this hesitation and you have them hyping each other up. They just kind of went for it.
Yeah. With a short little
exacto
knife.
With a little exacto knife. Like, what do you think you're going to do? So they're just, all they can do is pierce the skin at that point.
Go around the bone.
Yeah. And then you just have that perfect moment of him glancing over and seeing the concrete blocks and you're like, oh my God.
Yeah. And he does it.
Oh, those blocks, like, just no problem.
Yeah, easy. And just like, Shea Whigham's like freaking out while it's happening.
Yeah.
That was so insane. Such a gross scene.
Totally. But that's what's most upsetting about this thing, too, is how it just snaps your bones when it's starting to take over your
oh,
body.
Yeah.
Like, watching Shea Whigham's arm, like, for his fingers snap back.
Yeah.
That's really, like, that makes you kind of squirm in your seat. Those
yeah.
moments.
Your like, his body's betraying him, like, one limb at a time.
Oh, God.
He's, like, holding him back. Don't touch it! And it just, yeah, the mm-hmm. fingers start snapping up, and then the whole elbow bends backwards.
Mm-hmm. But I want to go back quickly to where it's just the hand thing running around.
Yeah.
Which is hilarious. There's one point where the hand straight up risky businesses. Like, I swear. It
slides.
I swear this shot, they got it. It's down the alley and the thing slides.
100%.
I think the filmmakers, we got to have a risky business shot. Because it's so perfect. It's hilarious.
Yeah. I got to look up that name again of the little production company that did the effects.
Yeah.
The creature effects. They did a great job. Like, you can tell that it's a lower budget. Like, we're not using too much computer.
Yeah.
Just to, like, drop the big monsters into the shot, they would use it.
Totally.
Use CGI, but for the most part, they're using big puppets, which is probably why the shots were so quick.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's how you get away with it.
Exactly.
But they were able to portray such an amount of body language from these oblong shapes of human parts. You know, they could really
yeah.
sort of tell you what was going on. And, like, these creatures weren't just banging with their hands and fists or anything. They were, like, flopping over themselves and smashing with their torsos and heads and stuff. Like,
yeah,
the way that they moved was so gross and weird, marionette inspired. And like I said,
totally.
When I brought it up on my Scare and Tell, it reminds me of when Pennywise comes out of that, like, chest and, like,
and
all contorted
over. Yeah, especially with the snapped limbs and everything,
and the limbs are just snapping.
You're right, that's exactly what it looks like. But yeah, by having, like, just so many quick shots of the monster, and they can really rely less on having to spend money on CGI and more just, like, let's make a really good practical effect looking thing.
Yeah.
And we'll just show it quickly, show it from different angles, show yeah. it just from certain shots. And then that way we don't have to worry about showing the whole creature in one big moment.
Yeah.
So it's where, like, yes. a limited budget actually helps you have a more effective movie, perhaps, than if you have
yeah.
the money to spend on, let's just make the creature look like this.
Yeah. Cause that tends to be like, that tends to always turn into computer generated shit.
Yeah.
And that would not look that good in this movie.
No, I don't think it would either. And then for the smaller stuff, I think just puppets, right? Maybe some claymation or something.
Puppets and, like, very intelligent camera placement.
Totally.
To make that happen. Yeah.
Maybe a tiny bit of stop motion or something.
Maybe. Yeah. There could be some of that. I really want to look into this little company because they just did an excellent job.
Totally. Even like the spike stuff, I want to know how they do that, because just those subtle movement of the spikes kind of growing outward is so satisfying too.
It happens quick. Yeah, it like really gives you a sense of urgency for like not wanting to be touched, because the like even with zombie stuff, same deal, you don't want to let them bite you, right? But that you can put your hands on them and shove them away, you can hit them with stuff, like this makes me not want to have even like a contact weapon, you know? It all seems like I want to like be shooting them with guns, but there's no place to shoot them like in the head or anything.
No.
So when you see all these little effects on screen of this, the spikes just growing from immediately where, you know, some little human viscera got for 1 second, the spikes just start growing. That just fosters this idea that it's going to happen so fast. Yeah. Don't get anywhere near these things. Like, it really makes them a terrifying enemy.
And the spikes really show their purpose when the cop is severed in half and then reassembles. It's like, oh, these spikes like help the meaty flesh embed into other meat, like just allows it to become this kind of amorphous creature, which makes me think like a sequel, if you had a bit more money, would might be like nuts and over the top, but incredible if you have like all of a sudden this creature has dozens more bodies that it's attaching into itself and it just becomes this kind of like, I don't know, giant lump of flesh with thousands of limbs and...
Yeah, exactly. Dead Space, just one of the bosses or creatures from anywhere throughout the series is gonna fill
same kind
it.
Of thing.
Yeah, it's just like that.
Yeah,
just pieces of people. And that was so great, is like we didn't see some big huge lump that had general arms and legs and whatever. Like, we'd see the like the top of it looks like it was almost doing like a fireman's carry of like somebody on its shoulders. Like, there was a head coming off one side and legs off the other side. Like, it was a really strange posture to like meld these bodies together.
It really looked like just the two bodies, I guess, right? The cop and the girl.
Yeah, and the half body of the top of the cop.
Yeah.
That's
what it looked like. But I'm wondering why it didn't attach the other body to itself. The one that was thrown on the hood of the car that just kind of stayed there the whole time.
Yeah, it was attracted to the heat of the engine. So they just never interacted. The other ones were going after the people.
Right.
Yeah.
Huh.
Yeah.
Yeah, it made me think of Annihilation at times too, because we're dealing with like a kind of biological alteration.
Yeah, I got that too. Like, I got like a little bit of that nervousness when he's looking at the splinter in his finger and it's getting blacker and blacker. Yeah, you're like, oh no, that's turning on you. You don't want to let that keep going.
And it's hard. It's easy when you're watching a movie because you're like, just chop that thing off right away. It's nothing that's good can come from this. But I want to do that right away too. If I can't get to a hospital within like 10, 20 minutes and just this black stuff is spreading, like that can't be good.
The spreading is terrifying. But then the thought there is like, it's if it's in your blood, you know, it's out of your hand and up at your heart in two seconds.
No time at all.
You'd just never be able to catch it. You'd be fucked.
Yeah, well, something seemed to spread, like, while it's
in your
blood,
it seems like it's contact.
Stream.
Like, it doesn't seem like it is going through the blood. It seems like it's just creating little pods and growing from there.
You're right, because it was, like, literally just through the tip of his finger, if you saw that in that just opening shot.
Yeah, like the skin of his finger.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So maybe that's what makes it more slow-moving, as opposed to, like, when later in the end when it really got deep into his shoulder.
Yeah, he got gashed by that thing. That was cool, too, because you see, like... with physical contact, if you're like, you side check one of these things, it's, you know, gashes you up like a bunch of razor blades.
Yeah,
like he got shredded by just like glancing by it.
Mm-hmm.
And that was just such a good ending. Like,
and I love a good gas station hostage situation is so perfect. You got all these snacks, you got drinks, you got like a fridge, you got the count. There's just like a lot of different things to play with. I think that's a really fun setting.
It's so hard not to, like, as you're watching this movie, just like, oh man, I would want to, you know, fuck with, I want to open the fridge and just like drink 4 Red Bulls. And
yeah,
but and they're also in America, so you can get beers and stuff at a convenience store, so they're just drinking beers while they're hiding from the
American scaredy cats. You don't know how good you have it.
You have no idea.
Here in Ontario, it's getting a little looser now.
We just got grocery store beer.
We did
until like 10 o'clock though, so that's not it.
Yeah, so as of this year, we can buy alcohol in the place that isn't a government regulated distributed store that closes at 6 p.m on a Saturday.
Yes. But they're still like, they'll close that section early, and you have to go to like the smart serve register to do it. Yeah, you can't self serve beer or anything.
So we're getting there slowly.
It's very slowly. But yeah, they're just, I love that, because you were talking about how like at first they're like enemies, and over this like long sort of half hour inside the convenience store, they sort of have to become allies. And that's like after the arm cut, like Shea Whigham like suddenly has respect.
They're like, almost like best friends by that. They've been through a lot.
Well, that, at that point, you can tell, like, Paul Costanza's gone out of his way a couple times to save this guy, like, to specifically factor him into the threesome and keep him alive.
Yeah.
You know, and, like, we realize that, you know, he's pretty violent and aggressive, but his intentions are kind of good. You know, he's like, it could have been anyone. I just needed a ride. I'm just trying to get out of here so that I can take this nest egg that I have saved to give to the...
My daughter, or who is...
It was, he was strung out for like a week, and he was stealing a big rigs.
Yeah.
That's what he was doing.
Yeah.
And he killed a trucker. Like, he's like, get out. The guy didn't, so he shot him. He didn't kill the guy. He hit him in the spine, so he was paralyzed for a year, and then he died. Bankrupted him and his wife in the process, and all the while, this guy was sitting in jail.
Mm-hmm.
So he swore when he got out, he was going to take Lacey over the border, and he was going to give his nest
egg.
Make
it right.
Yeah.
Which is amazing, because at the first half of the movie, like, I love the writing behind this, because the first half of the movie, you're like, oh, this is just the bad guy, and it seems very black and white.
Mm-hmm.
But then, as they flesh out the character and you get this whole story, you have a little bit more respect for him, and you're kind of like, oh, they're not so different. Like, they're still a good moral person, surprisingly, which you don't expect.
Yeah, absolutely. He's... Yeah.
And I love back to the gas station thing. Like, once he realizes there's no one is there, like, no one is running the place, he instantly grabs a pack of Reese's Pieces, rips it open, and throws it down.
Just easy. Like, this is too easy.
Yeah.
And then, like, I think they've already seen monsters outside. Mm-hmm. And he's like sitting there, he's freaking out, he doesn't know what to do. He opens the cash register, he takes money.
Yeah. He just starts making the rent. Like, it just felt like, well, there's a routine. Do that, grab a smokes.
I just wish I could have had a hot dog. That's what I would wanted to do. Mm-hmm. Just grab a hot dog.
Yeah, if I was there, I would have been snacking the whole time.
Yeah.
Like, I would have been a character there that wasn't contributing much to the situation, but was always just like, yeah, we should do that. Yeah.
No.
But me, oh, no, I'm not good with cold temperatures. No. No, let's let Paul do that.
No, I'm allergic to the cold. Uh-huh. That was such a great little solution, too. The way that he dropped his body temperature to go invisible.
Love
that. That's just like such a satisfying sci-fi thing for somebody to do.
And it truly is.
The way that it was performed, like, you're like, okay, now he's super cold. He's invisible. Great. An easy win. But he could, like, barely walk.
Yeah. Thank you. Because, like,
great.
I was worried that was going to be. Like, a thing that he was going to go out there and be just
he's
going to
be cold for the next 40 minutes of the movie and nobody could see him.
Yeah.
He'd be leaping over cars and stuff.
Yeah.
No.
But no, he was totally, he was still trying to warm up by the end.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, he could just barely walk. He got into the thing. There was no keys.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the car wasn't on, so he couldn't use the radio. That was just another great one of those moments where it seems like in this movie, they're like always asking themselves, like, should we give them a break? No.
Yeah, they come. That's what's so satisfying and unsatisfying is they get so close to
all their little plans.
Yeah, like the cop is right there, like, just radio in, get some backup now, please.
I'm not taking my eye off you.
Yeah,
it's like, darn.
So it's very well written in terms of just these little micro moments of suspense and tension that just naturally lead into the next one.
Yeah,
yeah.
And admittedly, I felt the exact same way that the beginning of the movie doesn't seem like it's as good a movie as, like, the second half.
It definitely won me over more and more. Mm-hmm. Like, at the top, I was just like, oh, this is okay. This is, you know, we've seen a lot of this before.
Yeah.
Even the hostage whole setup when they're in there.
Sure. Yeah.
Yeah. Which you're always like, what would I do in those kinds of situations?
This movie is ripe for
and
that.
They seem more just inconvenienced than freaked out when they are taken hostage.
Yeah.
Fine. Yeah, we'll go in the back. Like, they don't really seem...
Yeah.
They have, like, threatened.
They have, like, a dozen, like, false, like, maybe I should use this axe. Maybe I should hit him with this thing. Maybe I should run.
They totally do. Because you would run through all those scenarios in your head. She's got the tire iron. And you're like, is she going to go for it?
He's got the axe, you know.
Mm-hmm.
After they see the animal on the road, he stands there.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, I could get away right now.
I do love that he tries very early on to maybe pit them against each other, because he saw the spiky thing.
Yeah.
But he's like, oh, I can drive a wedge between them by making him think that she's crazy.
Yeah. What'd you see? Nothing.
Nothing. Nothing was there. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Make her look a little more insane.
Yeah.
So that's the junkie thing is such a great setup at the top to be like, for the first person to see it, be someone who's also in withdrawal and might be experiencing hallucinations. And the guy that she's with has gone through that already and is like, look, just calm down. Like, it'll pass. You didn't see anything. What do you mean there's a dude in the bathroom with spikes. Whatever?
Yeah, the way he looks at her when she says that. There's a man in the bathroom with spikes.
After she clearly just went to take a hit or something. Yeah.
There's a man with spikes. This is the bullshit I was talking about.
Yeah.
Then he flies out and kills her.
Yeah. Oh, my God.
So good. And just a cool aesthetic thing is they knew to keep going back and having a quick shot of that monster thing on the car.
Yeah.
And that was the most progressed out of all of them. Like, it, like the eyes were like darked out and there's spikes totally. Everywhere. Lots of blood. Just a horrific monster of a creature. Mm-hmm. All bloody, laying on top of the car. One of the coolest shots in the movie. It's like the bone in its arm is like sticking out. It's just disgusting and so well done. And they should have lingered on that.
And that was the guy in the bathroom who leaped at her, right?
Yes. And that was the guy at the beginning. Right in the beginning of the movie, he gets
opening shot. Right, right. Yeah. That I thought maybe was sneaky Pete, but we'll check in on that.
We'll figure it.
Yeah, but I'm still curious of why that creature is immobile the rest of the movie.
Like, I think because the thing it's on is hot. I think the car is still hot.
Oh, so it's just attracted to the heat, and it's the just heat. Like yeah. I'm good here.
Yeah, it's
like a turtle in a heat lamp or something.
Yeah, and maybe even like a forest for the trees type situation. It's not going to notice a lesser heat source when it's on.
Yeah, it's just drawn to that thing.
Yeah, and that is what helps. Pollock stands to figure things out is the fact
yes,
that this
yes,
one
yes,
creature
it to it.
Behaves in this one way and even references it later, mm-hmm. which makes its presence there the whole time very important. He references later, it's like, I don't think it was jumping at me. I think it was just jumping at the car.
Yeah.
And sure enough, it was. And sure enough, he was right. Great.
It is great. I wonder then why the bigger blob creature wasn't also attracted to that car in the heat of it. You
well,
know?
It wasn't. I don't know. Maybe because when they showed up, the car had just like... overheated. Mm-hmm. That's why it was there, and that's when the guy got on the car, and now he's there. Maybe the temperature's dropped a bit, and yeah. then from that point on, everyone else like was like she was just on the ground laying there and got dragged towards the front of the store. Mm-hmm. So now she's against a heated building, and there are people inside. It makes sense to me that now they're obsessed with the building, just looking for a target.
Right. Yeah, that's fair enough. Yeah.
And they keep getting targets, so it makes sense for them to wait there.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's nice that they're just. In this thing, and this creature is clearly like, there's somewhat hotter heat sources in there. I can't quite get at him, and it's just scrambling on the roof, you know, every opportunity
yeah, it must
to jump
be,
in.
It must be like a fox, like, smelling into, like, a bunny nest and going, like, I know they're in there.
Totally.
I fucking know they're in there.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And that's what I like about Annihilation, too, but, I mean, that needs to be really debated and picked apart on its own terms.
Oh, God.
But
yes.
the idea that it's just a more instinctual drive of this biological force, that yes. there's not consciousness. It's not a creature that's yes. conscious and fucking with anyone. It's just, like...
something that's existing.
It's innocent. Yeah, yes. It's just, like, a force that exists and is driven towards these things, just, like, all...
like a magnet.
Yeah.
Like, it
yeah.
has no intention. It's just doing what it does.
Right.
Yeah. I love that, too. And mm-hmm. that's exactly how they seem. Another cool like image too that was very consistent through the movie and like just added to a sense of coolness was the streaks of blood down the window and how we had constant shots of the cameras outside.
Yeah.
And Shea Whigham like looking through like lines of blood.
It like, did look great. You're right. Yeah.
Tons and tons of that. Like I really there was a lot of shots from outside looking through this really fogged up, blooded up glass, and it looked really, really stylish.
And I will say, as the blood dried, it got a little more yellow. Like, they did a good mm-hmm. job with yep. making sure that they didn't drop the ball on big blood.
No, good blood.
And even the cop actress was fantastic, who comes in and just kind of is assessing the situation, and at one point it's like, what did you do to yeah. that guy who's a big suspect?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, she looks down and sees where
yeah.
his girlfriend had been smashing her head against the thing. What did you do?
Yeah.
And he's just standing there like... you can tell that he's also kind of weighing his options, and he's like, if I wait, this cop's going to be killed.
Right.
If this cop is killed, we don't get back up and we don't get out of here. So he's kind of weighing his options, and then he finally goes on to say, he's like, you call this in. You let everyone in the county know.
And then by that end point, she's unsure of herself, too. Like, you can tell she's kind of sweating. She's like, what have I walked into here?
Yeah. I will call it in, yeah. but I'm not going back to my car.
Even that whole act of him struggling over, like, I think she's still alive. I think my girlfriend's still alive. Because that's what we would all do with a loved one.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
yeah.
if they're kind of moving somewhat and you think there's a chance, I think your brain just is going to ignore warning signs and
of
going
course.
To be like, I could potentially save this person.
Yeah, she's moving. She's alive.
Yeah. You got to let me go out there. Yeah.
Exactly. And there's no precedent to be like, no, we saw something strange, so there are zombies and this is how they work.
Uh-huh.
You know, you just got to go like, that's a freak insane thing that happened and she's moving. We uh-huh. have to try to help her.
Mm-hmm.
That's totally believable. And how he's like, he's super like hurt about that. Like, we don't lose a character and then it's just over. He's
yeah.
like, he's torn up about it. He stops like being the leader at that moment. Like, once it's like real, like she's bashing her head on the wall and stuff. He's like, come on, we got to get out of here.
He really
he's
does.
Just staring. He just can't handle it.
Yeah, that's an interesting point to raise too, that what makes it so compelling and watchable is that the power dynamic shifts across the film.
Yeah.
Like, who's in control, who has the mm-hmm. most power, who's being listened to. It's not just like the yeah. characters are, oh, and this is the one who's the bully and in charge the whole time. It really is kind of a dynamic thing
yeah.
all the way through.
Yeah, the situation changes. Everybody's like power role.
So yeah, exactly.
It's a well thought out movie, well executed,
and just really fun to watch. Like, it wasn't, there was a few tense moments and kind of grisly, like watching bones snap and stuff, but you're not overly freaked out. It's more just really fun to see what the hell are they going to do. I can totally see why you'd want to watch it immediately again soon after and with someone else. It's a good movie to show people, I think.
Yeah, and not knowing the first time that it was going to be good, I just threw it on.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Just like you'd really do a truth or dare and see.
Yeah.
Or no, sorry, would you rather,
and Would You Rather punished me. And this one is, you know,
more satisfying.
Yeah, yeah, the exception of the rule.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I fucking love that effect with the spikes when they quiver.
Yeah.
They just...
You see it at the top and then... At the very end, too.
Yeah, right in the mouth of that dead little animal.
It's almost, that's like a sonar kind of thing, or like it's sending out a signal of some kind.
Yeah. Yeah, like the cane. Yeah. Like the cane stalks shaking, rattling against each other.
They do. It's like they have like a, what do you call them? Not maracas, but just like
something like a
rattlesnake sound effect as they're quivering. Yeah.
Just weird, and it just makes you uncomfortable.
Yeah.
And yeah, you're right that it's a watch with anybody kind of movie, but another thing I really like about it is it does push you a little bit. Like, you do kind of go like, oh God, that's so gross. Or, oh my God, what the fuck? Mm-hmm. Bones snapping like backwards, like you said. Like, some of it is like really makes you cringe and your shoulders climb up.
Because it's like, it's contorted beyond the point where you can say, oh, this is a contortionist. Like, this is someone who's flexible. It goes beyond that point. Like, things are being bent backwards and in directions that it's straight up. That's fucked up, and it makes you squirm.
It's shocking, fast, out of nowhere, black, spiky effects to it.
But fun squirm, not in like a martyr squirm kind of way, where you're just like, God damn it, why are they taking all her skin off?
Yeah, yeah, they just...
Why are they taking her skin off? Why? Leave it on.
Leave it on. You've taken away everything. You don't need to take her skin.
Leave Britney's skin alone. great Jesus. Recommendation.
Yeah, great, I'm glad choice. You liked it. It's a fun one.
Maybe we should go to some Instagram comments.
Instagram comments.
So these comments are on the movie Mayhem and on Twitter. So it's more social media comments than Instagram comments. But on Twitter, Latifah Johnson 1 said, this was surprisingly good.
Yeah, is that surprising?
Yeah, I think that's pretty close with our sentiments when we watched Mayhem. I think we were a little more, like, we weren't overly surprised, but we were... impressed. It was better than we expected to be.
Impressed is right. Surprised, like, I thought I was walking into a really, really fun movie.
Right.
I was like the opposite level surprised for Mom and Dad.
Yes, exactly.
I was blown away that was that bad.
Yeah, so maybe because we had done Mom and Dad and Balco, and both of those were below expectations, we were a little more hesitant going into something like Mayhem. And,
sure.
Yeah. But still with Steve Ewan and some good imagery, like, we were...
Yeah,
we're so pleased.
I was surprised that it was maybe that good.
Yeah,
sure. Okay, yeah, I accept that. On Instagram, we have a comment on our Mayhem post from Child's Play 89. It was so bad I had to turn it off after like 1 hour. Bad FX soundtrack.
So this is the most negative comment we've gotten from you, Child's Play 89.
Yeah.
Usually you're a pretty positive dude, but you did like this one.
Yeah, you supporting all our choices and stuff.
Yeah.
No.
Bad effects. I didn't think the effects were too bad. I mean, what kind of effects do you need from just shoot 'em up?
Yeah, just blood and stuff.
Just blood splats. And we like those blood splats.
Yeah. Yeah. I can't think of a part that was bad in that way.
Hmm.
I can get, like, if you're just not into the tone.
Yeah. And
the soundtrack effects. No, I don't.
And even like you turned it off after 1 hour, but I do think that the last half hour of the movie is the most exciting when it kicks into overdrive.
Yeah. And I think it's a pretty consistent incline in terms of, like, you know, excitement and fun and everything like that. It gets better and better and better. Like, the momentum is very, very consistent.
Yeah, I definitely didn't want to turn it off.
No,
after 1 point,
not at all. Like, I didn't even find that there was anything about it that, like, even, like, waded into the territory of, like, I don't like this.
I guess for me, like, if I remember, it was, like, it is a little cheesy and cliche in some things, but it was still more enjoyable than it was cheesy or cliche. I'm just trying to think what would have made me turn it off, if anything.
I can see myself not being, having a moment where I don't want to watch that type of movie, but there's nothing bad about it.
Yeah,
from
my
perspective.
If you like Belko or one room settings, one building settings rather, give it another shot maybe.
Yeah, try out that other 40 minutes.
I go, we refuse to accept if the scaredy cat disagrees with our opinion of the movie.
Yeah, that's the power that we have over you guys is the microphones. You disagree with those, we'll talk. No, that's not true.
Thanks for those comments.
Thanks, guys.
Latifah Johnson and Child's Play as always.
Well, scaredy cats, thanks for listening to another great episode of the Tex Chris Dave Saw Massacre. I'm the Dave Saw.
I'm the Tex Chris.
And as dang always,
chaos reigns, chaos reigns, chaos reigns, chaos reigns. Spiky man gon' get you. Chaos reigns.
Yeehaw. See you next time, scaredy cats.